This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Bridget Dowd. Here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. It's the podcast designed to catch you up on some highlights from around the region. Thanks for listening. Here are a few of the stories for the week of August 11th, 2025. When you have a cell phone or a power tool battery that's old and doesn't work, where do you get rid of it? Putting it in the trash can put garbage trucks at risk of catching fire, and it's a growing problem that's forcing cities to seek solutions. KJZZ's Greg Haney reports on how one West Valley city is handling the issue.
Monday morning was a bulk trash collection day in the Saraville Village neighborhood of Goodyear. Some of the items on the curb include old furniture, tree branches, and cardboard boxes that could hold anything inside.
Yeah, so we just pretty much watch out for paint, lithium batteries, tires, just making sure we don't get none of that in the truck with us.
I'm riding with Robert Pappas, who collects trash for the city of Goodyear. He's driving the truck while his coworker uses a tractor to load large pieces from the curb into the back.
In this truck, I'm mostly looking at the piles when I pull up, kind of inspecting them really quick at a glance of an eye. I mean, we don't always catch it, but we're pretty much looking. See, we see some like baby toys there. I want to make sure there's no lithium batteries in those. So I'll get out and I'll just double check a lot of the stuff because that's a lot of our problem is the lithium batteries.
Pappas says more and more products have those lithium ion batteries that he has to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, some of the harder stuff to catch is the, like the newer vacuums, the Dysons, they have batteries now, so a lot of people don't expect that.
When the truck's compactor crushes its load, batteries can break and catch fire, and they burn in such a way that water cannot extinguish the flames.
You just gotta be pretty vigilant.
Goodyear has started using thermal cameras to monitor garbage truck compartments. The system alerts drivers when something in the bed hits 200 degrees before the fire can develop. These truck fires are growing more frequent.
It's not just a localized issue. It's a national issue that we're all trying to tackle. So a lot of it just has to do with communication and talking through on how to mitigate these things and new methods that may come up.
Eduardo Rodriguez is a deputy director of public works with the city of Phoenix. He says workers report garbage truck fires at least once a month.
In the summer, we see them a lot more. We may get 2 to 3 in a month. That's how frequent it may be. In the winter, it kind of calms down a little bit.
Those fires can happen at transfer stations, landfills, and recycling facilities as well. Phoenix uses thermal cameras for detection at some of those places. Rodriguez says Phoenix has been working with neighboring cities looking for solutions as lithium-ion batteries get into more and more products.
Your little remote for the car, you know, the keyless entry, cordless toothbrush, vape pens, pretty much anything you can plug in to recharge is a lithium battery.
That's Chris Aniol, a solid waste supervisor for Goodyear's Department of Public Works. He says while waste like paint, pool chemicals, and charcoal can cause fires, lithium-ion batteries are a major culprit. The potential for fires is a big reason cities have hazardous waste collection programs. If you live in Phoenix, for example, you can schedule a hazardous waste pickup while Goodyear has designated drop-off days. Some retailers, like Home Depot or Staples, may also accept old batteries for disposal.
People are starting to get the message, and that's really the only way to stop it. The cameras is just a way to, you know, kind of combat it once it happens, but ideally we want it to stop completely.
When these items end up in the trash and spark a fire, Aniol says truck drivers have a list of safety protocols.
You know, they got to get a hold of the fire department, they get a hold of us and all that stuff, but basically that's the main goal, get the stuff out of the truck and get it away from where it could hurt anybody or do damage to, you know, any houses or buildings or anything like that.
Drivers like Pappas have to dump the garbage onto the road. Pappas says he prefers to find a cul-de-sac or empty lot to empty the waste and wait until the flames are put out by the fire department. A shovel is needed for the next part.
As soon as it's out, we have to put it back in, so.
Greg Haney, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
Arizona's Medicaid fraud scheme preyed on vulnerable communities, swindling billions in taxpayer dollars and leaving countless patients without care. As KJZZ's Nick Carmia reports, now providers of sober living care face the monumental task of rebuilding trust in a shattered system.
Good to see you. You all be safe out here.
Just outside Cesar Chavez Park in southwest Phoenix, volunteers fan out into the heat. It's over 110 degrees and they carry water, food, Narcan, and compassion.
We'll be here till 5 o'clock.
Some of the people they meet have been out here for weeks, others years. And many are still reeling from a fraud scheme that changed everything. The scheme exploited Arizona's Medicaid system, known as Access, through fake sober living homes that promised addiction treatment to people and never delivered. Investigators say more than $2.8 billion was stolen, with over 100 people indicted and only a fraction of the money recovered.
It's hard, man, being out here. You gotta be tough. You know?
That's Ricky Gonzalez. He's been homeless before. He's been lured into fake treatment homes before. And he's seen what happens when trust is shattered.
Like, it's not that people are fools, man. It's just that they're vulnerable, man. And they're going through a tough time. You got nobody.
At Scottsdale Recovery Center, the story is different. Inside a quiet facility in the valley, Raquel Moody walks through the halls. She's not just a behavioral health technician. She's also a survivor of the very system that failed her.
They were all connected, you know, so they kept you in a circle. So if you were told to leave one, then they would have somebody there already waiting to take us.
Moody was raised on the White Mountain Apache Reservation. She got addicted to alcohol at 17, then meth. She thought she'd find help when she got out of prison, but she walked into 13 fraudulent sober living homes instead.
People that ran these fraudulent places, they just made it okay for us to, you know, just be stuck in our addiction.
They promised care, food, a safe place to heal. Instead, Moody says she was shuffled from house to house. Today, she's been sober for 2 years and has worked at SRC for one.
I'm glad I applied. I'm glad I work here. It gives me a chance to work on myself, too.
But the past isn't far behind. Moody says many of the people SRC tries to help don't believe in the system anymore.
When we do our outreach, majority of them, they've been in these fraudulent places, and it's like they've just lost hope, you know?
Her own sister has been living on the street since 2021. She says her sister became addicted to fentanyl after cycling through a fraudulent program. Reva Stewart says she's seen the same cycle play out. She's the founder of Turtle Island Women Warriors, a volunteer group that documents missing people and reconnects them with their families. Stewart began asking questions in 2020 when she noticed white vans circling Native communities. One of those vans, she later learned, had taken her cousin. Since then, she's collected evidence on dozens of fraudulent sober homes and submitted reports to law enforcement and state agencies. But she says too often victims' stories were ignored, or worse, leaked back to the very providers accused of exploiting them. Stewart says the outreach efforts now aren't just about water or transportation, but rebuilding a sense of trust.
The harsh reality is telling them that if they continue to be out there, they will die.
Stewart and her team do weekly wellness checks across the valley, often visiting the same people, offering acts of care. One of the people they found collapsed in the heat had been missing for weeks. His sister had been searching for him. When Stewart got him cleaned up and on a bus home, she says it was a rare moment of relief.
Today, he's got two jobs and he is taking care of his parents. He's still fighting his demons, but he's at home. He's safe and he's alive.
Stewart knows not everyone will make it out, but she keeps showing up.
If we can help one person get home instead of in a casket, by all means, you know, we're going to keep doing this.
For both Moody and Stewart, the damage is personal, and their work is now part of a broader assessment, one where they say the state's response still hasn't caught up to the scale of harm. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays announced a $6 million grant program last fall to help tribal nations and nonprofits support those left behind. 11 groups applied. Scottsdale Recovery Center is one of the recipients and says it's using the funds to expand care for people directly affected by the fraud. As the legal process plays out, people like Stewart say the path forward will take time, trust, and coordination across the state. Nick Carmia, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
This is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Local leaders have voted to block a massive data center proposed for a 290-acre stretch of land southeast of downtown Tucson. Project Blue was the latest in a slew of data center plans in Arizona and would have used millions of gallons of Tucson water. From the Fronteras desk, KJZZ's Elisa Resnick reports.
Pima County supervisors narrowly approved Project Blue in June. This month, Mayor Regino Romero and the Tucson City Council were set to decide whether to take the plan to the next step by annexing the land and supplying city water. It was a prospect that many residents roundly rejected.
Quickly walk through a water positive.
Hundreds showed up for a pair of tense community meetings hosted by city officials and Project Blue developer Beale Infrastructure. The project pledged to generate some $3.6 billion in economic development for Tucson from tax revenues, infrastructure, and jobs. About 180 permanent positions and many more temporary ones for construction workers like Jorge Pareda. He's with the local carpenters union in Arizona, and he says he and other members often need to commute to Phoenix for large-scale contracts.
Because as our population increases, the demand for jobs is going up, and the growth of jobs is not equal to the growth in the population.
He says Project Blue is the kind of thing that would allow him to stay in Tucson. But it also required water, at least 1,910 acre feet per year for cooling and operating purposes alone. That's about 6% of Tucson's total water supply. It would have used potable water for the first 2 years while a pipeline to bring reclaimed water was being built. That prospect is bringing up harsh realities for people like Danny Garcia. He's a sixth generation Tucsonan. He told organizers during a packed Project Blue meeting this month that his family's roots
used to be as deep as the water table. But unfortunately, that has gone down.
He said he's seen industry impact water here already, growing up on Tucson's south side.
We've also had industry come into our community,
where air bases and weapons manufacturers caused groundwater contamination.
Even before Project Blue, my concerns were that my granddaughter will have to leave Tucson around 2050.
He says he doesn't want to see a generation of his family be forced to move.
For her to leave because this area has to be abandoned because there is no water.
City officials have spent years trying to save water.
The river that we see, the water that we see, it comes from the treatment plants of Tucson.
That's Joaquin Murieta Saldivar with the Watershed Management Group. He's staring out into a vast reservoir lined with bushy vegetation and teeming with tiny fish. It's a wetland area in the town of Marana, just northwest of Tucson, that's full of reclaimed water. The Santa Cruz River used to open up here. It's dry in many places today, but reclaimed water has brought it back in some places.
I'm trying to see if it's easier that way.
Urieta Saldivar is leading the way through tall grass and dry brush to get to a section of flowing river. You sense the river before you see it. The sound of running water and slight thickness of humid, cool air.
And here it is. We finally made it.
Oh my gosh, the river!
The stream is about 10 feet wide and 3 feet deep. One projection estimated a 3 to 5 mile stretch of the river downstream of this spot would have dried up completely if Project Blue got the green light. Murieta Saldivar says replenishing river streams like this feeds the aquifer below us to ensure groundwater is recharged.
That water is to maintain the health of the watershed, is to cool down Tucson, is to provide local life, like all the birds that we were talking about, the migrating birds and things like that, not to cool down a big computer. Come on.
Last week, Tucson leaders agreed. It took less than an hour for mayor and council to unanimously vote to stop negotiations with Project Blue. Councilmember Lane Santa Cruz said Project Blue's backers weren't being transparent about their plans, and what's happening in Tucson is not unique.
Cities across the country are being sold the same story, promises of jobs, innovation, and progress. But what's not being talked about is who really benefits and what it will cost us.
Arizona is one of the largest data center markets in the country, and more deals are on the way. Like one plan that seeks to put a 3,000-acre data center corridor between Tucson and Phoenix. Mayor Romero says that's why she wanted to move beyond Project Blue.
For me, it is important to see the forest from the tree, to see what reality we are living in. And it is my responsibility to create guardrails to protect Tucson.
City leaders also voted to advance plans to set up regulations for large water users and new zoning requirements for data centers. Elisa Resnick, KJZZ News, Tucson.
The peafowl in the city of Glendale are running afoul of their human neighbors. Earlier this week, the city began taking steps to tackle the huge flock of peacocks roaming parts of Glendale. KJZZ's Kathy Ritchie has the story.
Glendale's famous peacocks and peahens live on the 17 acres that is a historic saguaro ranch at Saguaro Ranch Park. The flock started with two birds purchased at the Chicago World's Fair in the 1930s.
And from that small start, they have now grown to a flock of somewhere between 130 and 160.
That's Glendale City Councilman Bart Turner. He says the flock is running out of space.
They've been expanding out into the neighbor, particularly into our library next door, and into that parking lot and the asphalt. And they struggle finding places to build nests.
They also leave quite a mess.
It's a never-ending battle to keep up with power washing things.
Turner says the city council will work with a California company to relocate some of the birds in the coming months. Kathy Ritchie, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
This is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. And now here's a story from me. Law enforcement is investigating the parent-teacher network at a charter school in Queen Creek. The parent-teacher organization for EduPrize Charter Schools in Queen Creek posted on Facebook that law enforcement is conducting an investigation into financial matters related to prior members' activity. The group has since elected all new leadership and changed its name. The Pinal County Sheriff's Office confirmed it's conducting a theft investigation but could not provide further details. The parent-teacher organization is not doing interviews but shared meeting minutes that indicate the former president was removed for failure to fulfill duties, and the new board intends to conduct a full financial review. The school did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Bridget Dowd, KJZZ News, Phoenix. And now for a little something different from KJZZ's original production, The Show, here's the latest Tiny Desert concert and co-host Sam Dingman.
Today, we are featuring multi-instrumentalist Giovanni Kienji, who performed for us at Central Records in downtown Phoenix. I spoke with Kienji about the origins of his songwriting.
I come from Uganda.
Uh-huh.
So church in Africa is still a big thing. The good thing in church, when service is done, the instruments are there. The drums, let's say, the balafons, let's say, the adungus. So I used to practice what I see people do during the service.
Tell me more about that. So
if someone is playing drums, you know, and I was like, ooh, this is a nice one. I try it on my body.
Okay.
And try to replay that.
Did anybody notice you doing this?
Of course, yeah. And from there is where I started to meet people, like shape you here and there. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is supposed to be like this. Oh, this is sounding like this. Oh, this has to sound like this. So eventually, that's how different instruments come into my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
May I ask,
yeah,
did you feel any kind of spiritual relationship with the music, or was it just about reacting to the sound?
As a kid, of course, it was just what is going on in church, what is getting to see other people away from your home. Eventually, I developed like the spiritual part of it, and a certain time in my life, I was in a seminary. So I was starting to become a priest.
Really?
Yeah.
What was interesting to you about studying at seminary?
The way of living. When we meet someone, people want you to introduce them. Oh, I've done this. They're like, no, my name is Giovanni Chirinji, and that's it. Just be pure. I used to face this here in Phoenix when I just came in 2019.
Uh-huh.
Go to open mics trying to introduce myself. So you put your name on the roster, and then after playing is when someone say, wow, this is me introducing myself.
You introduce yourself through the music?
Yes.
Do you feel like when you are performing your music, you're saying something about yourself that you can't say in conversation?
Of course. I was born a weak child in terms of my birth. I was very, very weak that I couldn't play with the rest of the kids. My sisters, they could knock me down, and I was too small, too thin. And as a result of that, I listened to a lot of music. So whenever I'm playing music, it's like I'm going into that closet and appreciate.
You're going back to that younger version of yourself.
Sometimes I was like, look what God has done.
Wow.
Look what has happened of me.
So when you started to perform your own music,
yes,
it strikes me that there's a difference between doing what you were doing as a child, where you're sort of imitating what you saw other people do.
Yeah.
And now making your own statement.
Statements, yes. And owning them.
And owning them, yes. Yes, yes. So what was that like to see how people were impacted by the music you were playing?
First, straightforward, it was a rejection from my dad, because my dad was drawing plans for houses. And he wanted me to take the same. And I was like, yeah, I like music. I was like, no. Music is for spoiled people. They're drinking, they're smoking, they're doing. So I don't wish my child to be in. And being the only boy, so it was it was crazy for him.
So he associated music with bad behavior.
Bad behaviors. I told him, this is what I love to do. Either way, that's what I'm going to do.
Either way, that's what I'm going to do.
To do.
Did he eventually come around?
No.
No, okay.
No. I was supposed to go to the university, and I was introduced to ethnomusicology, which is the study of traditional music in its context.
Mm-hmm.
All over the world.
Right.
Every country has their traditional music. Been to India.
Uh-huh.
Been to Netherlands, Germany, Switzerland, France, Spain,
wow,
Czech Republic. So there's a lot of music. They learn music the way we learn music in Africa at the bonfire, by ear.
Mm-hmm.
When I play this, what do you feel?
Am I understanding correctly that you're saying it was less about learning a technique and more about learning a feeling?
Yes.
Connecting with a feeling that they were recreating?
Yes. It's from what you feel that we can shape whatever journey that we want to take. But if you don't feel it, then you can't contribute to it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So
you can't give what you don't have.
You can't give what you don't have.
That's it.
All right, so Giovanni, what are you going to play for us now?
I think let's listen to Buddu.
Okuja kuwaya mukalire mbavire mutono Jenere mama 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 Tabana gende budu, samone nia yenkeche. Rwachito waleta nidia nange, eye. Sebo manzi leta, akawane kazi ya kwe. Rwachito waka kubako, edio poko, edivene, edivene. Jenere mama, jenere mama. Jenere mama, jenere mama, jenere mama, jenere mama, eh. Davagwe banzireta, akabwane kazi ya kwe, wachito akakubako. Edio poco, yeah. Banga kuba, eke fumbi kechi swecho. Wachi te wachi sima sebo, muganda wange, etulia kukeche. Manchi sima, enkuba te avanze, sate gira, baganda bange mwe, muandiri te kukeche. Jirene mama, Jenere mama, Jenere mama, Jenere mama, Jenere mama, Jenere mama, yeah, yeah. Echo tonga chikute kwe, mama, tuanyu mianga, abage tuako changa. Echo tonga chikute kwe, mama, yeah. Tuanyu mianga, abagetwa kuchanga ngomano muwalo yo gamanya ebikwata kubufungo o a nangomule sisebo nemanya empisa waka jenene mama 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 mama, yeah.
You were talking earlier about how the music has to connect with a certain feeling. It has to be reacting to a certain feeling. Do you feel similar feelings every time you perform the songs, or do they change?
No, because we can't tame feelings. You can't tame them and say, oh, I have to feel like this certain way at this particular time. No. The only thing that comes in my mind is like, this is me. Ladies and gentlemen, this is me.
This is Giovanni.
Yeah, that's it.
So recently, on some of your recent albums, you have been exploring different styles than you've played previously.
Yeah.
Like reggae, for example.
Yeah.
Tell me where that came from.
Reggae is conscious music, so it's like music that has to come like deep from you, and every word that is being said there is pure. But I wanted to have something that when someone is somewhere can say, oh, this comes in you from Uganda, or this is Ugandan. So how do I contribute the Ganda kind of sound to reggae that someone listens and say, oh, this is reggae, but it's not the typical reggae that comes from the Caribbean. No, it's not the typical reggae for Bob Marley. There's something added to it.
Can you put that idea together for me with this other word that you've used a lot, which is purity, the idea of something being pure?
Yeah.
How do you reconcile the idea of something having to change with keeping it pure?
If you don't know where you come from, then there's no way you are going anywhere. Once I know where I come from, then I'm able to go on different journeys without losing myself.
So the purity is about where you're coming from.
Where you're coming from.
Where the music is coming from.
It's coming from.
Not the way you're playing it.
No. And to the rest of the world, stay together. The world is messed up. But once we're together, we can be broken. See you there.
Giovanni Chienci.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this particular talk and chat. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Hopefully you pick a few things.
Yes, more than a few. All right, and now we're going to hear one more song. Tell us what you're going to close out on.
I'll close out with Mandela. Thank you.
bakulabanga bakulabanga okulanga bana balala musano obulumi gwe omulina masanyu lw'obuvumu bwo gwe tolinga ku mimwa the man of Africa. Goes to rest Mandela.
This has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by the Helios Education Foundation, Alliance Bank, the Vitalist Health Foundation, the Intel Corporation, Beach Fleischman, the Arizona Community Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening and for your generous support. I'm Bridget Dowd. This is KJZZ. Listen more, learn more, online and on the KJZZ mobile app.